This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Mike Glennon, NC State legend, joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Are you as eagerly anticipating this game as every single person in Wolfpack Nation is and have been for an entire week, the longest week in the history of mankind?
I am really excited for this game. Usually on Saturday night, if it's a night game, I've been in meetings for the day before of an NFL game. So I typically haven't been able to watch these games. So to be able to sit in my basement, have a couple adult beverages and watch the Wolfpack go down to Death Valley, I'm excited.
All right, do we have an adult beverage plan? Do you have an adult beverage if things are going well?
I don't know what I'm going to go with. It might be worth more than just a beer. It might be some sort of liquor drink.
some brown liquid. Mike Glennon is joining us. All right, help us game plan for this. I have no idea what the weather conditions are going to be. I'm not sure we're going to be dealing with a lot of rain. I think the field might be wet. But if you're NC State, what is the formula, given decent enough conditions that everything is at your disposal? What's the formula to win this game?
Yeah, on the offensive side, they're going to have to come out and see how Clemson's playing them. Last week against Wake Forest, they played a lot of man coverage and got toasted by Wake Forest, Sam Hartman, and these receivers. Last year against NC State, they played a lot of zone coverage, but NC State was able to stay on the field. You know, this protects the corners, but NC State was able to win the time of possession battle. So whatever they do, they're going to have to counter them. So if they want to come out and play man, then these receivers are going to have to show up. Thayer Thomas is going to have a big game. Devin Carter is going to have a big game. And Devin Leary is going to have to be accurate. And these guys are going to have to make contested catches. Now, if they come out and play zone coverage to protect these corners, then the run game is going to have to get going. And then on the flip side, I think they got to mix up the coverage. Don't let DJ get comfortable because he's playing well right now. Mm-hmm. But you got to mix up the coverage, make him think post-snap so he can't get a beat on what NC State is doing and prove that he's able to go through his progressions and win the game.
And we're going to get to DJU in a second because I think we've seen in the last couple of weeks he looks like he has taken some major steps forward. Don't know about the competition against Louisiana Tech. But I don't think anybody doubts that Wake is a good football team, even though their defense has given up tons of points and yards over the last several years. I'm not sure anybody can do anything about good offense, though, in college football, and that goes for even the most elite teams. Let me go back to Devin Leary here. Leary wasn't great against ECU, and I think an honest assessment from Devin probably says, I haven't been at my best. What have been the unique challenges he's had to deal with over the first 4 weeks of the season, and where is he in that development timeline?
Look, when you come into the seasons with such high expectations and such high hype, you know, preseason player of the year, I think sometimes you try to live up to it. And sometimes you try to look for the big play. You're trying to force the ball down the field rather than just letting the big play come to you. And when you turn on the tape last year against Clemson, he did a great job just taking what the defense gave him. He took the short throw and just, you know, killed him by a slow death. They just kept getting after him. So I think he's got to get back to that. It's just let the big play come to you. You don't have to live up to the hype. How you played last year by just taking what the defense gave you, that's what got you to this point. So get back to that. And it's more than that. These receivers need to help them too. Mm. They got to win. They got to get separation. They got to make the contested catch. So I'm not worried about Devin. Devin has so much talent. He has an unbelievable arm. He's just got to get into the mentality of let me just take what the defense gives me. Don't get bored taking completions. Mm-hmm. and play the way he did last year against Clemson.
Yeah, look, I also, having sat with him now just twice in the last year and a half or so, I just think he's a really bright, grounded kid as well. And I think he understands the bigger picture. I think, I think he's got good leadership skills. Let me ask you about Devin Carter and some of the guys that we hadn't really heard from over the first 3 weeks. Those guys all got in the box score and made catches against UConn. Was that opponent-driven, or are these guys rounding into form, or we won't know until Saturday?
Yeah, it was definitely a positive sign to see them win against UConn. But to your point, if they're not winning against UConn, then we got big concerns. And so let's see what they do this week. Can they win against these Clemson DBs that really struggled last week against Wake Forest? So I think we're going to have to see Devin Carter have a big game, which he did last year. The guy had two touchdowns. Not he had a touchdown during the, I think it was the third quarter, and then he had the overtime winner. So Emeka Emezi had 14 catches last year against Clemson. So they're going to need someone to fill that void. And I think it's going to have to come from Devin Carter just because he's more similar type of skill set to Emeka than a guy like Thayer Thomas is.
Will Thayer Thomas throw a touchdown pass in this game?
I mean, if Clemson's not prepared for it, they tried running. Thayer threw one against Clemson last year. He threw two weeks ago against Texas Tech. If they're not prepared for it, then shame on them.
I mean, you just have to assume that Thayer Thomas is a quarterback at this point. All right, before we get to DJU, defensively, NC State is different than most of the teams in not only in the ACC but in the country. Can their defense win this game, knowing that Clemson is going to try to establish Will Shipley on the ground and then take advantage of a ground game to make big plays down the field? But is State's defense good enough to beat Clemson with just enough help from the offense?
Yeah, I think NC State's scheme and personnel match up really well for Clemson. You talk about the run game and taking away Will Shipley. Well, right now, NC State's 10th in the country in run defense. And you got those three linebackers in the middle with Isaiah Moore, Peyton Wilson, Drake Thomas. I mean, it's going to be hard for them to run the ball. And then on the back end, I think I saw a stat yesterday that NC State's only given up something like one deep ball all year, which is what Clemson's been great at. DJ has done a great job getting the ball to the outside to Bo Collins and Robert Ngata and Antonio Coleman, I believe is his last name. So what Clemson does well, NC State has done a good job so far taking that away. So I personally think this Tony Gibson 3-3-5 defense, the coverages he plays, and the personnel to go with it, it sets up well for NC State's defense to go against this Clemson offense.
Yeah, look, I love everything about watching the Wolfpack play defense, and it's cool to see, especially Peyton Wilson. I know he got dinged up, I think it was in the first game, but man, it's amazing to see him play. We forget how big of a prospect he was a few years ago, and he has suffered the injury bug. Do you feel good? Do you feel good about Saturday night? The moment? Do you think
I feel good about it. I think they can go down there and knock them off. I think having last year, having that confidence, and until you do something, you don't know if you can really do it. Like, I think we can beat them, but I don't know. I mean, this is Clemson we're playing. Like, can we actually beat them? Well, last year, these guys proved we can beat them. Now it's time to go do it down in Death Valley and end this 36-game win streak.
All right, sir. I appreciate. Don't overdo the brown liquid if that's where you go.
What about you? Are you going?
My going? No, I have a hockey game.
No, your season.
Yeah, but I still have to work. I still have to go work the game. But
I mean,
at least it's a 1 o'clock. It's a 1 o'clock hockey game, so I don't have to actually bother myself with it until I'll be done with hockey by like 5. So I got plenty of time to
so
catch the game.
Capital Broadcast isn't giving you a private jet or a helicopter down there? I
You
mean,
know,
come on, Adam.
I should have asked. I should have asked for that. They would have given it to me. They would have put me on the Sky 5 and choppered me down.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
Come
I should have asked. My fault for not thinking like that. Mike Lennon, you are the best. I appreciate your time, man.
on. All right. See you, Adam. Thank you.
Could I have gotten it? Could I have gotten it, Sky 5?
I can just imagine you just doing the show from Sky 5. Like, how great would that be? Live from Sky 5. I'm currently over Mebane right now.
How about all of the old school morning news programs that did traffic from the air?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Traffic from the air. So there's a guy flying a plane around telling you where all the traffic is. That was where when I worked at BAL in Baltimore.
Yeah.
We had that. We had that guy. And if we have time later, I'll tell you a story about how I really, really screwed up by making a joke to the guy, to the traffic guy.
Uh-oh.
All right, I'll tell you that story if we have time later on. Carolina Panthers hosting the Arizona Cardinals, 4 o'clock on Sunday. So Fox has a game to show in the 4 o'clock window. Anish Shiroff gets, I'm just going to guess, 3 more hours of sleep, or he gets to come back from wherever he is doing a college game tomorrow. First of all, where's Anish Shiroff's college game at tomorrow?
So we have Purdue at Minnesota.
Ooh.
And I'm currently standing outside of the Graduate Minnesota Hotel here in Minneapolis near the beautiful University of Minnesota campus. So the good news is the game is 11 a.m. local time. There is a flight home. So for the first time this season, I will get home Saturday night, get to sleep in my own bed. My wife and daughter are out of town. They're with the in-laws in Seattle. The dog is boarded up for the week. So I can also sleep in tomorrow. So I got to be honest, or sleep in on Sunday. I got to be honest, I'm looking forward to that. You know, getting in Saturday night, sleeping in Sunday, and being ready to go for 4 p.m.
That is awesome. All right, so what is your view of what a win does for this team? Coming off their first win of the season, does it free them up at all? Does it get them to relax a little?
I think it quiets the noise, frankly. The noise on the outside, you know, is a lot different than what you see on the inside, and I'm there every day. But people talk, and if you're 1-3, the conversation, let's be honest, is a lot different than if you were 2-2. And I think it turns down the temperature on a lot of things. And I just think it relaxes the atmosphere. To me, if they get a win against Arizona, and I think it's a game that they should win, you know, you got one more game on the homestand. And from what we've seen out of San Francisco, quarterbacks injured. Jimmy Garoppolo pulled an Orlovsky, stepping out of the back of the end zone. They did not look great offensively against Denver.
Right.
Those are two winnable games ahead of you on the ledger, and you get to 3-2, and you're getting better in the process. To me, there's a lot of value there going forward for the next two-thirds of the season.
Anish Shiroff is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Panthers and Cardinals, 4 o'clock start, 3 o'clock airtime right here on The Fan on Sunday. So Christian McCaffrey has got 2 straight 100-yard rushing games. He looks great. Yet another scare for people because of a quad injury. What is there, that any light you can shed on where he's at right now?
From what I know, and I wasn't there today, he was at practice in a white jersey. He's been on the injury report every week, and he's played the last 2 weeks, and he's played well. So I'm kind of at the point now where I'm going to expect people to overreact to it, and rightly so, because he's only played 10 games in the previous 2 seasons. So anytime there's a little nick, a little bruise, and he's on the injury report, people will jump to conclusions. People will overreact. I'm sort of in the camp of, let's get to game day and see how he does. And load management looks like it's in his future. They're already giving him Wednesdays off.
Sure.
You know, at this point, whether he practices a whole lot, I think, is slightly irrelevant. It's, hey, is he good enough for the usage that you want when Sunday rolls around?
He certainly has looked good enough for the usage that they want. I'd like to see more usage, but obviously, if that would lead to
more plays, though, and I think that's a fair point. You know, people say, well, you know, you look at the offense and the rushing numbers, and how come they're not running it more? Up until this past weekend, they hadn't run many plays.
Right.
They were, I think, minus 21 in terms of plays just in the fourth quarter of games. So, if they can stay on the field, convert third downs, run more plays. To me, I think that changes the calculus.
So I'm not asking you for an opinion on who's wrong or who's right here, but the Panthers' passing game has not been great. And when Matt Rhule was asked about it yesterday, he put the blame on everybody, which is fair because it probably is everybody's fault. Then a reporter went into the locker room and asked DJ Moore about getting open. Like, I just think that right now, their whole offense is just not in sync. I just like to see him let it go at some point. And almost seems like they're trying to be, I don't know, too careful with things rather than just let it rip. They've got some good athletes.
I'm with you. And Baker Mayfield sort of alluded that when he spoke to the media the other day. Hey, you know, we've been a little tight. We just haven't been ourselves. DJ Moore's a guy who's had 1,100-plus yards receiving in three straight seasons, and he's done it with Sam Darnold, Teddy Bridgewater, and a Cam Newton who was not the Cam that we all loved and remembered as his quarterback. So if Baker is close to 2020 Baker, I think the expectation is DJ Moore puts together his best season. That would be the best quarterback he's had in 4 years. So I look at DJ Moore and I say, yeah, slow start, 6 targets, 1 catch last week, 18 targets, 7 receptions in 3 games. He's got to come up and progress to the mean. Christian McCaffrey, obviously the health stuff will always monitor. Baker on some of these throws off platform, just hasn't had the right mechanics off his back foot. The throws have sailed on receivers. Yeah, they've been in every game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not trying to flip this, right? If this is going to be the offense all season, yeah, we've got problems. But if the offense can improve and go from where it is now to, again, just league average, how they've looked on defense these last few weeks, man, all of a sudden, you know, this is a team that can do some stuff. And it's better than league average. You know, now we're really talking.
Yeah. Anish Sharaf is joining us. Look, real quick, I have that got the news on in front of me. What is, as far as you know, what is our weather situation supposed to be tomorrow, rather Sunday in Charlotte?
As far as I know, the worst should be today.
Right.
And then it's supposed to abate at some point tomorrow. And I would imagine by Sunday, we'd have been through the worst of it. So hopefully it doesn't keep too many fans away. But again, I would say safety first, you know, do what you feel comfortable with. But I think by Sunday, I'm hoping. I mean, we're in the clear. We have Brad Panovich. He's a great meteorologist locally in town. I trust him. So Brad says the worst of it's coming, you know, this afternoon and tonight. And if that's the case, then hopefully we're okay by Sunday.
Anish Sharaf is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. All right, I know you've got Minnesota and Purdue, but I'm going to ask you about another college football game because we're all obsessed here. And you've had the Wolfpack already this year. You have thoughts on State traveling to Clemson?
I do. I got a lot of thoughts. One, they need guys to step up in the receiving game to help Devin Leary. You know, the biggest thing that I've noticed offensively is it's been a one-man show largely, and that's been Demi Sumo-Kongbe.
Yeah.
He's been the most explosive player on offense. And then in the Texas Tech game, he had a couple of miscues and nearly fumbled that one away. They have not looked great in 4 games this season. I don't really count UConn, which is a shell of a program.
Right.
They should have lost to ECU. If you look closely at the Texas Tech game, there were a lot of self-inflicted wounds by Texas Tech. Muff punts, bad play calling, going for it, you know, on fourth down with too much time left deep in your own zone. And NC State benefited from that. And to their, you know, to their credit, they took advantage. But to me, this has not looked anything like the team that you thought would be a top 15 preseason team. They're going to have to be that version that we thought they would be in the preseason to beat Clemson. Otherwise, it's not happening.
I agree. I agree with that. But I also have faith that they're going to get to it.
Let me throw this out at you. I'm going to flip it on you. Because I got a lot of buddies who are State fans, and the text that I got that stays with me a couple days ago, friend goes, wouldn't it be the most NC State thing to beat Clemson and then lose to a team like Syracuse in a couple weeks?
Uh-huh. I mean, it wouldn't be, like, would it be a State thing? Yeah. But here's the rub of this is that, I mean, and you're a Syracuse guy, Anish, the Orange might actually be good.
They might. I think the jury's still out a little
right.
bit. You know, they've had some close calls, and Purdue and Virginia helped them out toward the end of the game. But again, I want to see the NC State that we were promised in August. I want to see, you know, Devin Leary play like the ACC preseason player of the year. He hasn't been that guy. Defensively, they're sound. they're solid. You know, Tony Gibson with his scheme and then the disguising of coverages and the blitz packages coming any down, any time. You know, defensively, they've been pretty sound. Offensively, Leary, again, has underwhelmed a little bit. And they don't have what I call the one phone call guy this year. Emeka Emezi last year was your one phone call. You're in trouble? Who's your one phone call? It's Emeka Emezi. Third and seven, throw it to Emezi. They don't have that guy this year. You know, Thayer Thomas, I think they want him to be that guy, but you know, he's your slot receiver.
Right.
He's not the alpha the way Emezi is. Devin Carter's underwhelmed. They're going to need help in the receiving game because otherwise teams are going to key in on the run. And with Clemson's front, they can key in on the run. And Clemson's weakness right now is the back end. How are you going to make them pay? This is a week where the NC State receivers need to step up because that's the one weakness for Clemson defensively, the secondary.
Yeah, Wake Forest exploited it a lot. Enjoy P.J. Fleck rowing the boat as Minnesota hosts Purdue. We'll be checking out Arizona and Carolina on Sunday afternoon. Thanks so much for the time, Anish. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, Adam. See you.
Take care. Anish, at Anish, ESPN, Anish Sharaf. All right, it's time. It's the round table.
Camelot. Camelot. It's only a model.
We're Knights of the Round Table.
Our Knights of the Round Table today. We have, there you go, Julian Campbell. Sir Randy of Slack. Randy Slack, ESPN Wilmington. Julian Council from the Honorable Company of Football Podcasters. It's the Locked On Panthers podcast. Gentlemen, I appreciate both of you. First, as I legitimately inquire about your own personal health and safety, given that the havoc that Ian is causing in the Southeast, let's all agree, weather sucks, all right? Weather sucks, and we all should have been meteorologists. How much wealthier would we all have been if we were meteorologists and we had thought this through?
I didn't even know that was a lucrative field to be in.
You don't
true?
Think Jim Cantore straps himself to a lamppost in Punta Gorda, Florida for no money, do you?
Well, for him, but how about locally? Is Brad Panovich at WCNC in Charlotte making that kind of money? If so, then yes, I regret not going to meteorology school.
Gotta be better than all of us. Anyway, although I don't know what everybody's situation is, so I'm confident, though, that we all screwed it up. All right, let me start with you, Julian. Tua Tagovailoa, thoughts on the consecutive injuries, return to the game, just to set the context, return to the game against Buffalo because he cleared protocol. They said his wobble was due to back and ankle injuries. Are you buying any of that lead up before last night?
Yeah, so this is a story I really didn't pay much attention to at all because I'm immersed in the 1-2 Carolina Panthers, and I didn't even watch the Thursday night football. I watched it briefly last night, turned it off, came back after Southern Charm was over, and realized that Tua wasn't in the game. Like, what happened to Tua? Looking at Twitter, apparently he got knocked out again. Yeah. It's hard to understand how a player who had concussion-like symptoms was able to pass the protocol, come back on Sunday, and then 4 days later be able to play in that game last night. We know that football is an inherently a dangerous game, and unfortunately this is part of it. I do have questions of the Miami Dolphins staff and whether the independent neurologist was involved, because it's hard to sit here with not knowing very much at all. As again, I barely paid attention to the story to feel like Tua Tagovailoa should have been out there last night to be put in that situation again where he was taken to the hospital and then apparently was watching a movie with Mike McDaniel on the way to Miami following the game. So it's a wild situation and something that certainly they need to look into further. Yeah.
He actually says he had headaches on the plane. No way. Randy, how come nobody is talking about why you're a Bengals fan, right?
Yes.
Yeah, why your nose tackle, Josh Tupou, I mispronounce his name, why he ragdolled Tua and nobody's talking about that. I mean, he just completely ragdolled him. Like, since when has that become okay?
Well, I don't know if you've heard of AFC North football with James Harrison and, you know, all the Pittsburgh Steelers and Ray Lewis's of the world,
right?
Vontaze Burfict. Buddy, this is just how we play football in the AFC North.
It's an AFC
North thing. Quarterbacks. We beat the crap out of people. That's what happens. AFC East, NFC South, that's baby football. We play big boy football in AFC North. That's what happened. This Tua thing, man, it's at best, the concussion protocol is broken, and we don't know enough about concussions.
which is terrifying. There's no reason that guy should have played last night.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because he cleared the protocol, even though we've all seen the video of him wobbling. First he goes, he gets up and he's clearly stunned and he's shaking his head trying to shake the cobwebs out. And frankly, it's insulting to call them cobwebs because it's a lot worse than that. And then he wobbles and goes to the ground. Then when he gets back up, he's basically propping himself up against an offensive lineman. They're talking about a no-go, right? There are no-go signs that we can all see. I'm like, what's more no-go than that? And I think the players need to understand that. Like, I'm not blaming players because there's a player culture. But, I mean, can't somebody, even on their own teams, like, you know what? That guy's hurt. He doesn't know he's hurt, but he's hurt.
Isn't the protocol there to be able to protect them from themselves? And this is not the first time we've seen this happen with a Dolphins quarterback. Go back to, 2017, I think, when Matt Moore was starting the playoff game in Pittsburgh. He got knocked out cold, sat out one play, and came back with what was obviously a concussion. So the league needs to look at it. I know J.C. Treader, the NFLPA president, will put out a long statement to reevaluate the entirety of the concussion protocol. And it's certainly concerning after everything I've seen and read about Tua and what went on Sunday and, of course, last night.
Players,
Adam, I heard Andrew Whitworth last night say that players game the concussion protocol like the test that you take.
Yep,
that's not the first time I've heard that before from an NFL player. These guys, look, I get it. You don't want to let your team down. If you're not injured, you're hurt, you want to be out there and you want to play and you want to be tough. And that's great. That's admirable. But we have to have adults in the room that are kind of looking out for these guys' long-term well-being. And clearly we don't have that.
Right. And the problem is, look, I'm trying very hard not to say I'm blaming players. But there is a culture. You say the players game the system, which is true. And Whitworth also told a story last night about a teammate that took Whitworth off the field because he knew that Whitworth was not right. So it's the responsibility of all players to look out for each other, and obviously that didn't happen with Tua. I'm not blaming players, but this entire thing. Also, the players, they agreed to the protocols. So whatever the protocols are whatever the player said, that works for us too. Because, again, they want to stay on the field as much as they can. Like, it's a terrible thing, obviously, for Tua. We see it routinely in the NFL anyway. The players are cattle. We have to, they understand it. We should understand it too. All right, let's go to this. I'll start with you, Randy. State at Clemson, go.
Man, I want to see more from this offense with NC State. You know, I cover Carolina a lot more because we're the home of the Heels at ESPN Wilmington. And
good plug.
The other team's just kind of on another station. but I hear the offense is great, and I've been looking for it. The defense looks awesome, but we need Devin Leary, who allegedly is going to be a first-round quarterback or whatever, to play like he's a guy who's going to be a pro one day.
Well, Leary has not been great. I also think that he has targets that have not been great. That's certainly a problem. Julian.
Yeah, that is the problem, Adam. I went into the season, there was a lot of hype about Devin Leary, but his best receiver is gone in Emeka Emezi. And you look at the left tackle, Ike Ekwonu now being here in Carolina, that State offense was not explosive last year. When you take it Emezi, yes, I know what Thayer Thomas Benn will do in his career, but does Thayer Thomas really scare anyone in college football? Is he going to be a game breaker? Devin Carter, I've never been really impressed with him, and I'm not trying to be overly critical of a college player. But him, Keyshawn Lezane, I look at that offense, and the question for me a lot was just like, okay, the receivers, they have experience, but do they scare you? Running back-wise, I have been impressed by Sumo Karnbe and what they've been able to do in the run game. So that has been one of the things that's been a bright spot, experienced offensive line. And honestly, with Leary, yes, it's the receivers, the weapons around him. He has not been great. Drake May at Carolina has been better than him. Jordan Travis at Florida State's been better. Hartman's been better at Wake Forest. Riley Leonard at Duke has been better. Garrett Straight, he has been a middle-of-the-road quarterback in the ACC, and that's not what we were expecting. They don't have the they don't have the Devin Leary delivers hats for the Heisman campaign for what he's produced in the first 4 weeks of the season. Like, overall, he's been okay, but he's supposed to be excellent. And he's going to have to be excellent on Saturday night like he was last year at Carter-Finley if this State offense expects to go out there against a very good Clemson defense and have success. And they're going to have success. Going to have to be in a passing game. But do they have deep threats like Wake Forest had last week that could cause stress on a Clemson secondary?
No, Wake Forest receiving core is better than NC State's receiving core. And I agree with you about Thayer. I think Thayer Thomas is very good. But Thayer Thomas, you're not game planning. We got to shut down number five. Look, just to provide some context, Leary has not played well. The ACC also has a whole bunch of really good quarterbacks. So I was looking at the, like, Leary, I think, is like 13th or so, or 12th in total QBR through 4 weeks of the season. So stacking up against the other quarterbacks, it hasn't been there. But we all know that what he's capable of. But I do think that Devin Carter, who I agree with you, Julian, is not has not been great. He wasn't great last year, but his ceiling is higher, and he's got to get to that. Let me ask this of you, Julian. Are you worried about the Wolfpack having a UNC versus Notre Dame not ready for primetime moment? Because that we saw that last week.
Are we calling Carolina playing Notre Dame last week not ready for primetime? Was that what the expectation was? Because I know this is NC State playing in their first AP top 10 game in the history of its program, which I'm just – to all due respect to the Wolfpack, I think to compare what they're going up against on Saturday night against a Clemson team they beat last year for an opportunity to put themselves in the catbird seat. Now, the Atlantic's tough this year. They're going to still have to beat Syracuse on the road. So they're going to beat Florida State. Like, it's not going to be
Wake.
They beat Clemson. And, yeah, it's not going to be like they just – and Wake. It's not like they beat Clemson and it's all over. There's still a lot of good teams left on their roster.
It's their first ACC game.
On their schedule. Yeah, so – but to respect the pack, I'm not going to compare – what their game is against Clemson on Saturday night to what Carolina was facing against Notre Dame last week, a Notre Dame team that lost to Marshall and barely skated by Cal. This is a massive opportunity. Last year, big win. But other times we've seen State in these situations. Let's go back to a couple years ago when they were playing Clemson at home. Didn't get it done. And that same season, they lost to Notre Dame on the road in a top 15 matchup. This is an opportunity for a State team with all these guys who said they came back to win a championship to go on the road and do something that the 2016 Pitt team with James Conner did. That's the last time Clemson lost a home game. So I don't look at NC State faltering on Saturday night as far as not being ready for primetime. Guys who've done it last year know what it takes to beat Clemson, just to have to have a better overall offensive game plan and execute if they actually want to be in this game to the fourth quarter, which I think they will do. Will they win? That still remains to be seen, of course, Saturday night.
Even though Notre Dame wasn't great, they certainly looked like it against Carolina. It was still
a talent discrepancy.
Right.
Well, I mean, look at the talent. Like, when you look at what North Carolina's going to play on Saturday against Virginia Tech, like, they have the 24/7 team talent rankings. Virginia Tech is 53rd. Carolina is 16.
Right.
Notre Dame is 10. So, and when you look at that, Notre Dame has 49 four-stars. Carolina has 29. So there's still a major talent difference, although not excuse enough to how bad that defense has been, because there's plenty of four- and five-star guys on that defense that don't make plays week in and week out for the Tar Heels.
100%. Randy, were you embarrassed as the North Carolina affiliate?
He should be.
I mean, it's not great, you know. I mean, it helps Drake May's stats when the defense plays as terribly as they do. I will say in their defense,
What are you going to defend?
There is no defense.
What are you going to defend?
It's inexcusable.
That defense is a lot of three-star guys. There are four- and five-star guys. There are a lot of high recruits, but the guys that are playing on that defense aren't as talented. Granted, they are way too talented to be as bad as they are, but I will say you can't say that they have a four- and five-star defense when they really have a three-star defense.
Yeah, they have some best players.
The three-stars – Raven Hassick's a junior college guy, and he's one of their best defensive linemen. He's their best defensive lineman, honestly. Same thing with Cayman Rucker's a three-star guy. And then you have Cedric Gray, who's their leading tackler, a three-star player. Okay, so outside of that, Tony Grimes, five-star. Cam Kelly, four-star. Dez Evans, five-star from ESPN, four-star from 24/7. Jabari Ritzy, four-star. Power Echols, four-star. Like, their best players on that defense are three-star players, and the rest of them are four-stars, DeAndre Boykins, who are not making plays. Okay, Storm Duck, also a three-star, but a guy who started for 4 years now. So
it's a five-star name, though.
So like five-star name. Yeah. But let's not sit here and act like, oh, the three-stars are the problem, when the three-stars are the ones making the plays on that defense.
The problem is player development, right? Isn't the problem player development right now?
Clearly.
At least
Mac won't fire his
guys. Is playing well.
Yeah.
All right, let me – I can't allow you to just defend North Carolina like that, Randy. Just blatantly defending North Carolina. All right, back to Julian. I want to see if I can get two topics in here. I don't think I can. Because Locked On Panthers podcast guy, I haven't asked him a question about the Panthers yet.
It's totally fine.
It's their seemingly annual annuity game against the Cardinals. Carolina's won six straight in the series, including one in each of the last 3 years. Why will they be 2-2 after Sunday and provide fans with false hope of a playoff run?
They'll be 2-2 on Sunday because the Arizona Cardinals, like the Panthers offense, has been one of the worst first half offenses in the NFL through the first 3 weeks of the season. They have yet to score a touchdown in the first quarter, only have one first half touchdown so far this season. Now,
no
Panthers,
in
their own right, only have one first quarter touchdown scored by the defense last week, and only two touchdowns total in the first half, one scored by the offense late in the second quarter there against the Browns in week one. I just think offensively, they're going to finally get that rhythm. The Cardinals have had one of the worst defenses. They're last in yards per play allowed so far through the first 3 weeks of the season. And defensively, Carolina has figured it out against Arizona the last couple seasons. I know last year didn't play Kyler Murray, but even in 2020, they were able to contain him. I think defensively, they'll once again be strong, and the offense will do just enough on Sunday afternoon to provide what you call false hope and get the Panthers to 2-2.
I mean, 2-2. 2-2 is good.
That's not bad. It's better than 1-3.
You are what your record says you are, Randy Slack. Will they give fans false hope, Randy?
I don't think you are what your record is. I remember the Steelers a few years ago being 12-0, and people knew they weren't really 12-0. If this team's 2-2, they're not really that good. The only thing I hope out of this game is that Baker Mayfield runs in for a touchdown and tells everybody he's back.
That would be nice.
Fires the ball at the back wall. Look, here's what we're going to get. I just want the Panthers to be fun to watch, but we are going to get a chance to watch Kyler Murray, who used to be a baseball player, and we'll close on this for Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast, and Randy Slack, ESPN Wilmington, Slack on Sports. All right, Aaron Judge is one home run away from becoming the all-time American League home run king. Will he also be the all-time home run king if he hits one more home run, Julian?
Yes.
Ooh, old school. Ignoring Barry Bonds 73, huh?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Randy? Cheater.
Well, the record's 73, so no. The Barry Bonds didn't break any rules in Major League Baseball, so the record's 73. The bigger deal that people should be talking about is Albert Pujols hit 700 home runs. Nobody cares, but some guy for the Yankees ties the record, the franchise record, and it's apparently the biggest thing that they talk about on the national ESPN affiliate. This is why people don't like baseball, because they've been told for years that only the Yankees matter and any other team doesn't matter in Major League Baseball. And
so
that's why
bitter.
Viewership's Twittering. So
you're so bitter.
And Adam, also recognize I am a Braves fan. A big series, of course, this week in between your Mets and my Braves. So Henry Aaron's always going to be the true home run king.
Mr. Met on my shirt today.
I see. If I knew that, I wouldn't be here.
Mr. Met on my shirt today. I have the Braves on the money line at +110 against Jacob DeGrom today. Randy Slack, I got no more time for your bitterness with Albert. I've been talking about Albert Pujols for 3 months now. So
thank you.
You chill out. Randy Slack, at rslack37 on Twitter. I thank you very much. Julian Council, at Julian Council. Thanks for your flexibility and your insight. You guys were both great. I appreciate your time.
Of course. Thanks, Adam.
You got it. That was fun. My gosh, that was good. Thanks to Julian and Randy. We got a lot of stuff done. So that's it. We're ripping through all sorts of topics with two of my absolute favorites. We've been talking about Albert Pujols.
But he was speaking from a national level. And I will say, Randy does have a point that we do, or on a national scale, there's been way more discussion about Aaron Judge. Yeah, we never did cut-ins for 700.
Pujols. Right.
But here's the thing. Four people now have ever done that. Like, why wasn't that a bigger deal?
I agree with you, and Randy has a point in that the Yankees are the needle in baseball.
Yeah.
They are the needle. And that's for whatever it is. Now, part of the Pujols thing was also it happened in Los Angeles. So it happened late late on a Friday night.
Still.
Randy's right. Pujols deserved that kind of run. But we tried to give Albert Pujols his due.
Yeah.
How many times did I say, look, I'm a Mets fan. Mm-hmm. I hate the Cardinals.
You do hate
more
the
than
Cardinals.
I hate any other team other than the Yankees. But I can't hate Albert Pujols.
No.
And what he's doing is incredible. And by the way, Yadier Molina's still playing too.
Yeah.
Those two dudes are amazing. I think Cardinals are probably sneaky, dangerous, simply because they're the Cardinals. I don't think they're that great. But the way Pujols is hitting, and they've got two. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got two other guys in their lineup that have just been awesome, including Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, they are a dangerous team. I mean, they'd have to have their hitting shoes on to beat. I think the three best teams in the National League are the Dodgers, up here, Mets and Braves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Cardinals are, to me, the Cardinals are fourth. But I think ultimately Cardinals, Padres, Brewers, Phillies. I don't know what the Phillies problem is the last couple of weeks. I think they got swept by the Cubs twice. So it's really about the first three teams. It's really about the Dodgers, Braves, and Mets in whatever order you want to put them. And we have, I think, incredibly fun series today. The Yankees, because that single season record, that's a little different. That's a record. 700 is not a record. It is a milestone.
Yeah.
But yes, the Yankees matter. It's the Yankees. And I saw how many people were mad that they were double boxing games. Clemson, Wake Forest.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Aaron Judge comes up and it's a double box.
Yeah.
So I understand being mad about that.
You know, it's interesting. They didn't do that during Monday Night Football.
They did not.
Oh, sorry. Monday Night Football. They never did that.
They did not. They did not. I actually didn't see the home run live. I saw it after the fact and then I watched it. And actually, that was a very good point made by the media writer for The Athletic, who said, this isn't 2002. It's 2022.
Yeah.
In 2002, before Twitter and those forms of media became so prominent, where you could always see it. So as soon as it happened, boom, it's going to be on your phone.
Yep.
Like, all right, you don't need the double box. 2002, where you had to wait for a sports center to come when 11 o'clock or whatever the next sports center was. Yeah, I get it. I understand. I understand that. And I don't think Randy's necessarily wrong. But he got the answer right. The question was about who's the real home run king, and the real home run king is Barry Bonds. And you know what? It's okay for Major League Baseball to wear that. It is. It's okay.
This is the Adam Gold Show.